good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Let's begin the show with the latest updates on the COVID-19 outbreak. Malaysia recorded 212 new confirmed cases over the past 24 hours. Now, this is the highest daily increase since the start of the outbreak in late January. This brings the total number of COVID-19 cases to 1,518. Now, in other related news, we have the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, today announcing that EPF account holders aged below 55 can access their savings to cope with the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, withdrawals from account 2 of up to 500 ringgit a month for a maximum of 12 months will be allowed starting the 1st of April. This is on top of an earlier measure to reduce the EPF contribution from 11% to 7%. Will this be enough to ensure that households have the resources to ride out the pandemic in the next few months? Joining us on the line now, we have Dr. Nungsari Ahmad Radi, economist and chairman of Khazana Research Institute. Good evening, Dr. Nungsari. Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, what do you make of the announcement to allow for EPF contributors to dip into their account too during this time?
Well, I'm one of those who don't quite believe in tinkering with the EPF, whether reducing the rates, the contribution, or worse, withdrawing from your future retirement funds. So, you know, but back to this proposal, if you have 500 ringgit to withdraw every month for 12 months, I mean, that's fine. I mean, you get the benefit. But the problem is, I think, those who need some help are not those who have $500 a month to withdraw for 12 months. I think, so in that sense, this thing doesn't quite get to the target group that I think that needs the most help right now at the beginning of this crisis, so to speak.
Look, sorry, can we just go back to actually why you disagree with the very idea of either, you know, reducing contributions to EPF or using it? Because I think there's quite a bit of chatter out there about this whole idea. People are saying, well, the government is asking us to use our own money rather than, you know, dipping into savings or finding other solutions to help the ordinary Malaysian.
Yeah, that's one reason. I mean, basically, that's our money. I think more importantly, we know that actually a great number of workers do not have enough money for retirement. They're short by about, 200,000 at the end when they're 60. So I think we ought to think about other ways of actually trying to help those in need of assistance right now. And I think the other thing is actually a lot of people in the informal sector, you know, the so-called gig economy, they don't even have a EPF, and these are the ones who are most vulnerable right now. And I think we should think about other ways of trying to assist them.
Can I come back very quickly to what you said? You know, a lot of people don't have enough in their account to even cover 500 ringgit a month for the 12 months. Now, according to EPF annual report 2018 data, we have bottom 30% of active EPF contributors only have 5,000 ringgit in their account too. That means they won't have enough to draw down 12 months worth of 500 ringgit a month. Can you talk to us a little bit about the vulnerability of the some Malaysian household income during this period?
Oh, I think the first group of people that's vulnerable are people who, I mean, clearly those lower income people who've depended on actually being out there. See, the problem with this situation right now we have is actually the best prescription to address this COVID epidemic is actually to put people in. But that basically is like somebody on cancer, right? I mean, you put them on the chemo, the ubat itself is actually part of the problem. So people who depend on selling things, you know, making money by selling things, pasar malam, pasar tani, whatever, little retail stuff, they are the ones who were most affected. And at the same time, people who are on daily wages and people who actually depend on these people buy affordable stuff, they are also not able to have those things. So those are the ones that need to be helped to begin with. I mean, that's the issue of managing the the epidemic. That's one issue, putting resources there, and the government has done well there. But this bit about helping those who have been affected by the MCO, that's the one that actually we should think of.
So how do you propose helping those most affected by the MCO?
Well, I mean, if you've heard and read about what has been done and proposed in the UK, for example, even in the US, they've not passed it yet, but UK have gone through it in France. Actually, there's not much. I think the government has announced some, effectively, some transfers. So for businesses and for people, it's both a cash flow problem, right? I mean, for businesses, the cash flow problems might end up to be insolvency problems, and insolvency problem might end up to be bankruptcies, and bankruptcies result in laying off and unemployment. So that's what we need to help small businesses, especially first. But at the same time, you also have workers who are affected by this. So short of transfers, to me, short of transferring cash, that's what you need. This is not about trying to manage aggregate demand or trying to hit some growth numbers. This is just to keep households and businesses afloat while we overcome
this. Can you tell us about what you think might be the constraints that government's under at this point in time? We have crude prices at half of what it was expected, so on and so forth. Are there real constraints on what government actually can do?
Yes. I mean, if you this is a question of perspective, right? I mean, if you think of this as a fiscal stimulus, that means you're looking at it from, there's a shortfall in aggregate demand, it's probably a reduction in growth numbers, and I need to prop up demand in order for me to get the numbers that I want or to get out of recession or whatever. And then you begin to think about fiscal constraints, about level of indebtedness and so on. Yes, our fiscal situation is actually bad, but I think the perspective ought to change. This is not about fiscal management. This is about trying to keep things going, literally trying to keep livelihood going and preventing a worse outcome at the end of it if businesses fail and then you get massive unemployment after this. So there are massive constraints, but you have to mobilize resources that's available in the country. And I think there's enough liquidity to do the kinds of things that needs to be done. I mean, this is unprecedented. I mean, we've not faced this, not in 2008, 2009, not in 98. This is quite a sustained thing. It's not a 2-week thing. If we need to go beyond 2 weeks, you can imagine the vulnerable people are going to be even more exposed. Right? That's not saying anything about the disease itself, but the consequences that this thing has on people, on businesses, small businesses.
So if this prolongs and this pandemic, you know, will take an impact to the economy, so we're looking at it during and then we're looking at it after and what we can do to kickstart the economy. You talked about cash transfers, Dr. Nungsari. Can you give an example of what you're thinking, what kind of ballpark figure you're thinking about in terms of a cash transfer? Is it around the 500 ringgit that is expected to be withdrawn from EPF every month? Is that going to be enough to take care of these households?
I mean, No, this is not about income replacement. This is about trying to tide people over because of the circumstances that they're in. This is literally about making sure, I think the PM earlier on said, making sure there's food on the table. You asked me a number. I mean, the ESH.
Bantuan Sara Hidup, yes?
Yeah, Bantuan Sara Hidup. It's about, 600 per family. I think that's the kind of transfer that you need, and you need to do that quick. And earlier on, we had this e-wallet thing. We have the infrastructure. We have the list of people. We know who are the vulnerable ones. I think we should just go ahead and do it. I think the Treasury should not be putting a fiscal perspective on this thing. This is just to tide people over. I think the government has announced about 500 million more. The Ministry of Health, fine, do that. Can even put more money in there. But at the same time, you need to address the vulnerable people and businesses. Because the consequence of not doing that, it's quite dire, actually.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights with us. We're going to take a quick break. And after this, we're going to take a closer look at the plight of refugees and undocumented workers during these difficult times. Stay tuned to consider this.